everyone. Welcome to Story Nerds. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Jessica Kate. And we have here with us today, Melissa Ferguson. Welcome, Melissa.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here.
Now, Melissa is a fellow rom-com author, and actually she's with the same publishing house as me and has the same editor, so we call ourselves publishing twins. So, Melissa, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am Melissa Ferguson. I write for Thomas Nelson and like with Jess, and I'm a mom of three kids, 4-year-old twins and a 2-year-old.
They are stinking adorable, by the way.
Yeah, they get themselves.
You gotta follow on Instagram just to see them.
Yeah, aww. It's true.
Thanks, guys. We were definitely at Target at 9 o'clock last night getting Halloween toys. It was a good time.
So, and yeah. You live in the Tennessee area, right?
I actually live a mile from this or less from the state line of Tennessee and Virginia. So okay. I live in kind of in both.
Awesome. And we're here today to talk about the upcoming Countdown to Christmas Hallmark movies list. All three of us watched all 40 trailers this week. Some of us are bigger Hallmark fans than others, but these two ladies are big Hallmark fans, and they are working very hard on me.
It's
and
Hallmark so... season. This is a thing. You have to be able, you will learn. You will learn.
okay. So, Melissa, I hear that you have got a pretty good story about a Hallmark movie, a church event, and a bit of mistaken branding, I guess we could call it.
we can most definitely call it that. So, I was really excited last year to host my first kind of Hallmark, get a bunch of really sweet pastor's wife and church ladies together and come sit together and we'll watch a Hallmark movie and it'll be so sweet and so fun. And so these girls came to my friend's house and I picked out this great movie and it was supposed to be about snow in Alaska and this guy and girl got stranded and have to travel together. So we're all watching it and hanging out together and then it slowly like there starts to be a few red flags that pop up that maybe something is amiss here. And
like, in hindsight you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yes.
Hindsight, good pun.
Yes. And then the major like suddenly like the red flag turned into like a bright like on fire red flag in front of us when we're all watching and then all of a sudden this guy drops his pants on the movie and we all scream seeing this butt naked guy. And I'm like sitting there with church friends. A pastor's wife is literally like right next to me.
Oh my gosh.
And I had been, and I'm like, oh, okay. And it became very apparent that I had accidentally not actually picked out a Hallmark movie at all. But what tried to appear like a Hallmark movie and was very much not. So, I guess this is like your Hallmark party tip out there. Is make sure that you actually pick out a Hallmark movie when hosting a church ladies Hallmark night.
We are going to start off by talking about some of the Hallmark movies that are upcoming. Now, I know that Hallmark season has begun for Countdown for Christmas, but we have watched all 40 trailers for the entire Countdown for Christmas. So we're going to talk about some of our favorites. And Melissa, I am going to throw it to you first. What is one Hallmark movie that you are really looking forward to watching?
Oh gosh, put me on the spot. Well, my favorite one was called Nostalgic Christmas, and it's with Brooke Dorsey, and she apparently runs, she's like the buyer for all of these toys, and I love when she says, you know, she was like, if it's not made of wood, it's not a toy. And as a mother myself, well, who has like 3 million plastic toys downstairs as we speak. But at the same time, I was like, oh, I like her. Because I agree. There is something beautiful about wooden toys. So anyways, it's about her. And she's like this big buyer for this big toy shop and toy company. And she goes home to Garrison Toys. And I think her dad runs the shop, and he brings out this box of like carved Santas that are like so gorgeous. Basically the whole trailer, I was like, yeah, she didn't carve that as a child. That would be, again, illogical, but that's okay because it's Hallmark and we love Hallmark.
Forgive.
And they're so pretty.
We forgive Hallmark a lot.
We totally do.
I don't know why we do, but we do.
Well, I mean, it's just, so, I think it's all the jingle bells. It's like, we just want to hear those all the time. All the jingle bells that are in every single trailer of every mm-hmm. single movie that play.
And like the sweet Christmas music playing in the background. And
yes.
Oh, no.
It's just so happy.
Yep. So that one is my favorite.
It sounded like the Santas were the whole reason why this movie stood out.
Yeah. So those Santas, she ended up, I think they somehow were using it. Again, there's the title, Nostalgic Christmas. And there's like a Christmas committee that she has to like be a part of with this guy and somehow help it, and somehow the Santas play a role. I'm not sure.
But at the end, it just was cute. What happens? Every Hallmark movie.
Oh yeah. Well, it was really sad and everyone died.
Yeah. Oh.
No Hallmark movie ever.
I think we have now brought Jess into being able to watch them by lying to her.
I'm just telling Hannah, who watched 2.5 Hallmark movies this weekend, I watched 2 Terminator movies this weekend. So. I did write some notes down on this one. I thought it was cool that she was a toy buyer because that's a different kind of job that I would be interested in seeing. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's a job. I guess someone has that job. That's an awesome job and I would like to see it on screen. I did laugh at, I think it had the the worst acted or the most like, the actor snuck in sarcasm. There's a point where this teenage girl, like older teenage girl, is looking at these Santa ornaments and she says, wow, those are so cool.
Oh, Jess, you could be an actress. Listen to yourself.
At least on the Hallmark Channel. Let's not go too far.
And I was like, it's like she hated it and she wanted to make it sound sarcastic, but just eased off enough that it made it into the movie. I also wrote, I watched all these and then I sat at work and gave my workmate, who was really horrified at the thought that I had to watch 40 Hallmark trailers, my version of the recaps of the trailers. And not to talk up my comedic value too much, but he was in tears with laughter by the end of it, more at the Hallmark stuff than my retelling. But we wrote, I said, does this make me a bad person, Matt, that I wrote this? And he said, no, it does not. I wrote, ugh, want the kid to have a drug addiction because there was a kid in it. And it was another thing where they like sit on the couch and give the kid a hug. And then that's like, oh, they're good mother material. And Matt and I wanted a little more gritty drug addiction in there. I also wrote he's hot.
That so would never happen in a Hallmark movie. I can never imagine a drug addiction in a Hallmark movie. That just doesn't happen ever.
Maybe this is just in America.
It was not about the kid. It was about the hero, by the way.
Oh dear. And that's true. Like in the Hallmark, the Hallmark standard is just, you know, no really deep issues, just light and fluff. But that's why you love them.
Or if I love them. Yeah, or if it's an issue, it's like the backstory, so it's not it doesn't hurt so much. You know, widower. Yeah. Okay, we're going back. We're not truly experiencing that grit, which is why we love it.
It's like Sleepless in Seattle, just like the last 5 minutes.
yeah, that's true.
Okay, Jess,
so give us your one, Hannah.
Oh, okay. Well,
oh, you want one? You haven't had enough grinchiness yet.
So they have 3 singers on different movies, and I'm excited for each one of the 3, but I'm going to mention my favorite, Kristen Chenoweth. Kristen Chenoweth is in a new Hallmark movie this year called A Christmas Love Story, and she plays a choir teacher, a former Broadway star. How apropos. If you don't know who Kristen Chenoweth is, I don't know.
In the trailer, they termed it a washed-up Broadway star, and I was like, harsh.
She can't be washed up. I think she will never be washed up in her. She will die at, like, 90 on the Broadway stage, still singing opera. But Kristen Chenoweth plays Catherine, and Scott Wolf, who I don't really know as well, plays a guy named Greg. She now is a children's choir director who has just under 2 weeks to write the title song for their big Christmas Eve show. Catherine becomes distracted when a musically gifted 17-year-old joins the choir unbeknownst to his single father, Greg. Ah, perfect setup. So if it includes Kristen and singing, I am all in.
Yeah, I would give that one Kristen, a try just to hear her.
If you don't know who Kristen Chenoweth is, she is the person who originated the role of Glinda in the Broadway show Wicked. So if it includes singing and if it includes Christmas and Kristen singing, that is, I'm just all in. I don't even have to care about the plot. I just have to be able to sit there and watch Kristen fall in love and watch Kristen sing. That's all I
need.
Well,
that one's plot actually looked better than most as well, because it had an actual conflict in it. And it was a decent conflict. The dad wasn't in favor of his son being in the thing. And I'm like, there we go. That's like, that one had probably the most family drama out of all 40 of these trailers. So
Fair point.
Of them I wrote, there is no conflict. This is just 90 minutes. According to the trailer, it's just 90 minutes of people smiling because there wasn't a problem. Like the Christmas scavenger hunt one. What was up with that one, people? Anyway, that one looked good was my point.
Yes, it does. Okay, Jess, I know that your love of Hallmark is certainly less than the two of ours, but let's hear one of the ones that you actually think you would watch. Had Hallmark in Australia.
Yes. Look, mainly the ones I'm most interested in are because I recognize the actors out of different things. So one of my favorite TV shows, which is a sci-fi comedy action awesomeness show called Killjoys. One of the main dudes out of that, I think this was trailer like number 30 or 40. This was really near the end. And I like gasped on the couch and was like, it's the guy out of Killjoys. And that just made the trailer so much more fun. So this one was called, also this was one of the better stories too, Sense, Sensibility and Snowflakes. So it is a twist on Jane Austen's Sense and Sensibility. Mm-hmm. So already we're a step above everything else. And it had the guy out of Killjoys in it. And so I imagined for the whole trailer that he was actually undercover on a mission to hunt down some evil aliens. And I was like, ooh, which character in this trailer is the evil alien? So that made it a lot more fun as well. And did I actually write anything about the plot? I mean, his voice is a little bit different in it. I have a lot of notes about Killjoys I've written here. I wrote that something was funny, but my handwriting is terrible and I can't.
That in itself is funny.
Dang.
We're going to assume it has sort of a plot because, I would assume that it's similar than Sense. I would assume that it kind of has a similar take on Sense and Sensibility. So we'll just.
And it's also the girl out of When Calls the Heart. So it was like, for Hallmark, it was like their big name actors, I'm guessing. And
they have like a twist.
It was a twist on Sense and Sensibility in that it focused on the younger sister, the one who's more fun.
And there you go. More.
So yeah, that one, there we go, folks. Imagine evil aliens in Hallmark and it gets more fun.
And so do you actually not have Hallmark?
Yeah, it doesn't exist in Australia. I couldn't even watch the trailers on the Hallmark website. They have geo-blocked us from just watching the videos on their website, let alone the
channel. Wow. Thank for you too.
Channel.
Wow. So do yeah, you guys YouTube also... You don't have a Disneyland in Australia.
No,
right?
We have different theme parks, but not Disneyland, okay. Which is sad. I love Disneyland. It's awesome.
So basically America's really happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have the gun violence or the national debt either. So.
Also, they have the Great Barrier Reef and there's a ton of perks about the beaches over there, too, but I won't get into that right now.
I admit, Disneyland is a big factor, but there's a few things.
And Hallmark.
Disneyland and Hallmark is just great. We have all the magic right here in the USA. This is me continuously trying to get Jess to move here, which I know will never happen, but... we are going to do a lightning speed round of the next pick we have, and then we're going to hear all about Melissa's book coming up. She is going to be releasing her book, The Dating Charade, really soon, and I am way excited for it. But really quick, before we get into that, Melissa, what is one more that you're looking forward to watching this year as far as Hallmark movies?
Yeah, I will say the one that I definitely, definitely, definitely want to see is Denise Hunter. She wrote a book called The Goodbye Bride. Well,
yes.
It turned
I
into-
I watch any Denise Hunter ones.
Yeah. And so if anyone doesn't know, Denise Hunter is also an author at the same publishing house Jessica Kate and I are at. And she is a super nice person, just really kind-hearted. And so I'm excited. I hope to gather again. We'll have like round two. I might have to like convince the church ladies, like, no, really.
I swear.
We'll be good. I know it will. So the Goodbye Bride is airing on December 19th. And I've already told some friends about it. And I said, we definitely need to get together and watch it and have popcorn. And it's about a woman who was engaged to a man. And then she remembers falling in love with him, but then she has anesthesia and she can't remember the last 7 months.
Amnesia?
What?
Oh, anesthesia. I was like, anesthesia, Anastasia, amnesia. By the way, I'm a writer and I use words for a living. Anyway, so basically she has amnesia. She can't remember breaking off her engagement with the guy that she was in love with. And then apparently she has met and then got engaged to a new guy and she can't remember any of that. So she basically goes back to the old guy and is still in love with him and like doesn't know it.
There's been a big development too. I actually watched two episodes of When Calls the Heart. I don't know what insanity took over me, but I'm putting it to your influence. So, hello, everybody. This might sound a little bit weird, me redoing an intro halfway through the podcast, but as you may have seen on Facebook, a tragedy occurred. The second half of our hilarious interview with Melissa was lost due to us not hitting the record button after Skype glitched out the first time. So, here we are a week later. We had so much fun the first time. Now we want to do the second half of it again. So Melissa is kindly joining me here. If you can hear birds outside, that's because it's 5:40 in the morning in Australia and I am sitting on my deck to not wake up my housemate. There are birds chirping all around because the sun is literally coming up. And Melissa is child-free, so we struck while the iron was hot, and we are here to do the second half of the interview again. And speaking of children, so this is now the portion of the podcast where we will be chatting about Melissa's awesome upcoming book, The Dating Charade, which we're all super excited for. Melissa, would you like to tell us a little bit of what it's about and what real-life anecdotes may have inspired some of the funny moments in the book?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The Dating Charade is it's a heartwarming rom-com, and it's about a couple that goes on a really good first date, and they tell each other that they don't want kids, and then they come home to find three children dropped in their laps each, and then they hide that fact from each other while trying to sort it all out, and so there are a bunch of funny misadventures, and there are six kids in it, three that go to the guy are twins and an infant, which at the time of me writing it, I had twin 2-year-olds and an infant, and a 4, 6, and 14-year-old to the female. So, yes, it definitely was an awesome opportunity in writing this to use real life comedic moments in my life. So, and one that made it into the book for sure was a moment where I had taken a moment to run to the restroom. And as you know, as a parent, it's just really hard to ever get a break. So I'm finally in the restroom and then my 2-year-old comes walking in with a sloshing gallon of milk that they managed to get from the fridge in probably 2.5 seconds that I got into the bathroom. And milk is going everywhere and they're sitting there asking for milk. They're like, milk, milk. And I'm like, oh, honey, don't do it. No. And so right at that moment, because the door had opened, I could see then my infant daughter who looked like she was choking on something. I jump up, kind of dodged my twin child and all the milk, run over to help my infant.
And now, what was your state of dress at this point in time?
Your what?
What was your state of dress at this point in time?
Oh, yes. I'm also definitely halfway clothed because I'm running out in a state of emergency. And so while I'm saving Gracie, my daughter, then also my other daughter, the other twin, comes up to me. And she had this habit of always wanting to stick her finger up to my face, truly like half an inch from my face, and have me kiss it. Like whenever she had a boo-boo or something. And so I kissed it while I'm trying to save my infant, while I'm like not clothed, while there's milk everywhere. And and she goes, "No, mommy, poo-poo." I was like, oh my gosh. And so it's just truly a moment where in 30 seconds, everything was destroyed. It was just total chaos. So I definitely included that in the book.
It cracks me up, and it makes me hilarious that you were telling me last week that you really had to fight to let the character be naked while all this terrible things was happening to them.
Yes, my editor was like, "I don't think you should include a naked person here," and I was like, "But they are. It was me.
This is how it went down."
So I'm like,
that
I'm
cracks
it.
Me up so much. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. And now I love too that the book is based on people, like part of the premise of the book is people trying to cover up these like lies that they've told each other, basically that they're not dealing with kids and they're trying to hide the kids and all that sort of stuff. For some reason, that like brand of comedy, the covering up of the lie, cracks me up. It's so funny.
It is. I love that style. I think it was really hard, and you'll know this as a writer too. I thought that was super challenging to pull off, because so often when you read books, you can just say, or watch movies, you can just say, just communicate with each other. You'll solve it. Just say it to each other. So to really get into each person's point of view and justify why they wouldn't just go off and communicate was a challenge for me, but hopefully it worked out. Hopefully I nailed it. We'll see. Or I feel miserably and the reviews will come in.
No, I love that when you see a story, a movie or TV show where those motivations are buried so deep, and you're like, I always felt like the show Suits did that really well. I literally saw one season where they had set this character up to be like, this was the thing they would never ever do. It was Lewis, and they were talking about like how he loved the law firm and it was like his family and he would never do anything to betray it. But then they set him up. They like literally said that in one episode. But the other thing that he loved more than anything else was Harvey's respect, and he'd always wanted to be considered an equal, and he never was, and he wanted it so desperately. And they set it up so that he had screwed up, and his choice was to either lose Harvey's respect because he had monumentally screwed this thing up, or do something that was like morally pretty gray, or actually I think just black, and possibly like put the law firm in danger, but it would cover up his mistake and he wouldn't lose the respect. And you were like, oh, that's so well done. They've literally taken the two things he loves most and pitted them against each other, and the motivation was like on point. And oh man, and that's respect Suits writers, because Melissa and I know how hard that is to do. You got to dig deep, man. So that's awesome. Can't wait to read about it. Tell me why this was the story that, when you sat down at your computer, this was the story that you needed to tell, and this was what came out of your brain.
I think it was twofold. I think part of it was the insanity of my life, 100% motherhood. That was just fun to share. But also, I used to be a teen coordinator for an after-school program at the YMCA. So the protagonist, she is also a teen director for what's called the Girls Haven in the book. And so I felt like I definitely saw and heard a couple of the teens that I loved so much go through some really, really harsh things. And that was just, it's just so hard to see. So in that story, she ends up with taking care of one of her teens, and then the teen younger sister. So part of it was just what would it be like if that was my life? Because that could have happened. You know, I had kids who've had some of those things in my program. And so some of those situations. And so I think part of it was that. I think the next part was just, well, it wasn't intentional, but we were kind of looking at international adoption at the time, and the idea of doing an international adoption or even a domestic adoption. And through the writing of this book, I think, you know, I couldn't, how do you end up with six kids drop in your lap? Well, it's not going to be through international adoption, right? So how do you do that and also have this like temporary out of nowhere? Well, so an easy way to do that, or well, not easy, but kinship, you know, if your sister drops mm-hmm. your children off with you, and you see that a lot in real mm-hmm. life, and then also from her workplace. So mm-hmm. so it ended up being a story a lot about adoption, or even more than that, foster care and mm-hmm. the power of family, however they came to be. And through that writing, it really changed my heart and my family's heart actually for it too. So now we are just starting to foster ourselves. So we are waiting on that call. It's been about, mm-hmm. I think we started in January or February with classes, and we finally mm-hmm. were approved. So we are getting, we're waiting for the call from DCS. So it's been a wild ride, but I will say that the book literally changed our family.
That is amazing. That is super cool and definitely such an important cause. And I'm so glad you got to write about it with authenticity, because I know that through your experiences, you understand the realities of these kids' lives. And so often in books, when they touch on foster care and different things like that, it's a little bit, it's a lot sugar-coated about what these kids are dealing with. But I know that your book, we've both been reading the reviews rolling in, and it's a rom-com, but it also is a rom-com with depth, everybody's saying. And, you know, and it's got that, it gives the foster care angle the weight it deserves, by the sounds of it. I haven't read it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. But that's what I'm hearing of everybody else.
And that was an interesting mix about it. I hope that people will receive it well, because it is, mm-hmm. you can laugh, but then there's also going to be hard parts in there, but then laugh mm-hmm. again. And then, you know, it's your happily ever after for sure. But I did want, like you said, I do want to give foster care the, and I used real stories from people I know who've been in foster care and things that have happened specifically to them, mm-hmm. to share about it. So yeah, it definitely is based off of real life.
Yeah, and that's something I remember us talking about while you were, I can't remember if it's the process when you were, it must have been when you were editing the book. Lisa and I go for the same publishing house, so we call ourselves Pub Twins, we have the same editor. And I remember you talking about, you know, you guys really put these anecdotes through kind of rigorous tests before they ended up in the book, and really gave consideration to what was included and what wasn't. And I think it would be good for people, as you read it, remember that these, they're fictionalized lives, but they're fictionalized real lives. Like these things, while the book overall is fiction, most of these anecdotes happened in some form or another to a real person. And I think sometimes people read things and think, your author just made that up, that couldn't be true, blah 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 blah. But this one, it is. You've just put it into a rom-com plot, and I think that's going to be cool to remember while I read it all.
I like that you tell me that you read my reviews, and yet you told me that you don't read your reviews. And I have to listen to you and not read my own reviews.
I have to admit, I have, since it's been, what month is now? It's November. My book came out at the end of July. So I think from about the 3-month point on, once it didn't feel like a baby book anymore, I was kind of focused on the next one. I'd sort of had time to let a few harsh reviews wash over me and lose their sting. I've like with my hands over my face peeked at Goodreads a couple of times, I'll admit, and I scan the star rating, and if it's less than 4, I'm like, skip. But if it's 4 or 5, then I'll read it. I'm just like, I just want to know that someone enjoyed it. Feels like I did all this effort and I don't know if anyone liked it or not. So I just kind of want to confirm to myself that someone read it. So I have gone back and I've just slowly read a couple, and I'll just read like three and then I'll go away and not read any for ages. But yes, I think it's a real balancing act. But I'm planning with the next book, definitely, I'm not reading them for like the first couple of months while you're in the really caring about it stage, and then once like time has passed and you've moved on with your life past the launch, then I can slowly start looking at some things. So author mental health tips. yeah let it lose, because the first couple of months, man, everything someone says about your book, you're like, this is like throwing spears at my heart, people.
Yes, I totally understand, for sure.
Yeah, but after a couple months, you're like, you know what? If that one wasn't perfect, I'm going to write another one and another one and another one, and they're going to get better and better and better, and we're having a growth mindset towards this. We've been learning about growth mindsets at work, so I'm trying to apply that to writing. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. But, yes, that is my experience so far with reviews. Speaking of, I saw that yesterday. This is not podcast related. I might end up editing this out. My Publisher's Weekly review came out for A Girl's Guide to the Outback, which is exciting. I saw it last night, so.
Good. What'd they end up saying?
They said it was endearing, which was lovely. And they quite enjoyed, I think, by the sounds of it. I have my main love story, but I also have a subplot about Sam's sister. And Melissa knows because she endorsed the book. Her sister and her old boyfriend have their own storyline throughout the thing, and I think they liked the sort of the dual love stories, and the book's a lot about home and the meaning of home and what does home mean to you, and yeah, they seem to like all that stuff of it, so that was okay. Very exciting.
Yeah, I really like the sister's story. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's bad to say, but I think I like hers even more than the main story. I just love Mick.
I know. I really, really liked it.
Mick in his like rainbow Crocs. I like had a habit of putting him in like really weird outfits. Like he just walks out the door and grabs whatever clothes are nearest because he's at home on the farm and he just doesn't care. And he like wears his mum's rainbow Crocs and different things. And I just love that he's like unashamedly half country boy, half surfer, and the clothing reflects that. So yeah, that was fun. Well, thanks heaps for joining me, Melissa, twice. You have had to put in more effort than any podcast guest before you. So thank you for coming back on and re-chatting about this. So the people did not miss out on too much. I think that all that's been lost in our lost recording now is me gushing about Chad Michael Murray for about 10 minutes. My remaining Hallmark review was just excitement that Chad Michael Murray was in one. So that was the other one I was going to recommend. Oh, and the girl in it had a pretty red dress and she wrote cool letters. She had a more Spirit of Christmas. That's what I remember about. But if everybody's watching those Christmas Hallmark movies, that one is my recommendation. Chad Michael Murray and the girl who had more of a sense of the Spirit of Christmas than all the other characters, who I believe the Spirit of Christmas just seems to mean obsessed with decorations in a lot of these movies. It's a thing I've picked up. But this girl like wrote some meaningful Christmas cards to the five people who meant the most to her in her life. So there you go, folks. There's a challenge this Christmas season. Sounds pretty awesome. And Melissa, if people are super excited for the dating charade, which they all should be, where can they find you on social media? Where can they find the book? What should they look out for?
Well, they can find me at melissaferguson.com, and my Instagram is melissafergusonwrites, and Facebook is Melissa Ferguson. So awesome. Pretty consistent, Melissa Ferguson.
And what day does the book release?
It releases December 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So get on Amazon, get in your Barnes & Noble or your Koorong, whatever shop you have, everybody, and go out there and get it. I saw your post the other day that like six people at your library already had like put in their reservations for it when it comes out. That's awesome. So get into your libraries now, people, and because there are lineups, you need to go and reserve your place.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize how valuable it was for all of us that it's incredibly easy to go to your library and say, hey, can I do a purchase suggestion for Jessica Kate's book, A Girl's Guide to the Outback, and Melissa Ferguson's book or audiobook? I want all the formats.
All the formats.
I have done it myself. And like the librarians are like, click, done, just ordered it. And I'm like, that's incredible. Incredible.
That is so cool. That is awesome. So get on it, everybody. Thanks heaps for joining us, Melissa. And I will see you all next time.